WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland, and live online at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Today, we'll be talking with Dr. Brian Doyle about adults with ADHD, understanding and treating adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Dr. Doyle is a clinical professor of psychiatry and family community medicine at Georgetown University Medical School in Washington, D.C. Dr. Doyle has extensively published articles on anxiety, depression, and ADHD. He is the co-author of The Impaired Physician and the author of Understanding and Treating Adults with ADHD. Dr. Doyle is in private practice in Washington, D.C. Call in today with any questions for Dr. Doyle to 845-624-1300. Hi, Dr. Doyle. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Glad to be with you. It's a nice way to finish up my work week.
Oh, great. There's so much involved in understanding ADHD. It's not just someone who can just not sit still. So thank you very much for being here to shed some light on this important topic.
Sure. Well, I'll be glad to. It's a controversial one because ADHD is well established in children, but a lot of people find that controversial, and there are still a lot of people, physicians and psychiatrists, too, who don't believe that adults can still have ADHD.
But what is exactly ADHD? First of all, I get it's the same in children and as adults. Is that correct?
Yes, it's the same disorder. The natural history of ADHD is slowly to get better. So over half the children who have it pretty much move out of their symptoms by their late teens. But a good half of people still have symptoms, and they can persist really through the rest of life. And it's those are the people who, as an adult psychiatrist, I see and who I treat.
So if a child had ADHD as a child and then now grew it, as an adult, though, they're just okay? They don't need any type of maintenance of medications?
Yeah, a substantial number of children do outgrow ADHD. And that's why, originally, in psychiatry, we didn't think that adults had it at all. We thought that happened to all children, but we were wrong. And the child psychiatrists realized that patients were still having symptoms and that they continued to need treatment, and they did well by the treatment.
So as an adult, how does someone decide that they need to seek treatment? What kind of symptoms exist as an adult that they think something needs to be done and checked on? Because something's just not right, maybe with their.
There are two principal areas,
okay,
Barbara. One are problems with attention, and the other is a problem problems with hyperactivity or impulsivity. And adults tend to have much fewer problems with hyperactivity than the children do, but the symptoms of inattention are really the big ones, and they're the same, and that they are. They are the difficulty getting things done in everyday life. And that these tend to be the things that everybody struggles with, but people with ADHD just find it impossible to get their bills paid. If they're lawyers, they find it difficult to get their billing done. Housewives find it very difficult to organize and run a household. Students find it very difficult to study for and take tests. It's the stuff of everyday life.
Now, how do you make the differential diagnosis between that occurring and just everyday life, that it's just everything is so harried that people are just running in so many different directions?
Well, because, you know, we have a couple of ways of doing that.
Okay.
One is that, you know, I want to get somebody's history. I want to see that there's evidence that these symptoms are significantly interfering with their life, and in more than one setting, that it's happening not just on the job, but it's also happening at home. So I'll interview patients, and I very often will have somebody else come in to talk with me about the patient. It's either a spouse or a sibling or a parent. So I get information from somebody else as well as the patient. And then we have standard rating scales that have been normed for use with adults. And I see where somebody's symptoms come out on the standard rating scales. And then by the time I've got together information from interviews with the patient and significant others and the rating scales, and then I often will ask for documented assessments. Are there old school records? Are there current work evaluations that document problems getting things done? When you put all those together, it starts being pretty clear whether or not this is normal or whether it's a substantial problem.
Now, you're asking for school records. What would that indicate, then? What are you looking for when you look at those records?
Well, very often I'll ask my adult patients if their parents still have their report cards from grammar school, because very, very often report cards from grammar or high school have comments that are absolutely classical. Fails to pay attention, does not complete tasks, does not respond well when spoken to, keeps jumping up and distracting the class, does not live up to potential, does not get paperwork submitted on time. All of these things will be back there, and they'll be on the report cards.
That's so interesting. Actually, I was reading in the book, Understanding and Treating Adults with ADHD. Everything is so specifically spelled out when you go through that, and I was really amazed that it truly takes, there's a fine line in, I would imagine, diagnosing it, because you need to have so much information about the patient. And you really go through a lot of different details in talking with the patients to get that information.
Right. I mean, I get two different kinds of patients. One are the patients who were diagnosed and treated as children, and then I will right away and get the records and the evaluations on them. And here in the Washington area, there are very good professionals who assess children. So often I've got good data on them. And then I supplement that data with my own evaluation, like I was telling you before.
Right.
The other kind of patients I get are parents whose children have been diagnosed and treated with ADHD. And then typically, and then the children are doing much better, and then one spouse will turn to the other and say, "And where do you think our youngster gets this, dear?" Because it's so much. I mean, ADHD is very strongly genetic, so that when you have children with ADHD, you typically have at least one parent who has it. And that's the other population of people who I see, are people who have had children identified, treated, and they're doing better, and then they say, "Well, you know, I really ought to be doing something about myself." And then they're fun to work with.
That's interesting how they look at themselves probably through their eyes of their child, and they see themselves, and then they seek help at that time.
Well, and often, you know, it's with more than a little pressure from their spouse. Because the spouse, you know, I mean, I have had patients come in here sort of figuratively at the point of a gun. If you don't do something about yourself, you know, I'm leaving, or where this is over. And that's not an ideal way to start treatment, though I've certainly been known to do it under those circumstances.
What would they say to you? Give some examples of what people would say with their spouse or vice, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, a perfect example is you know, I had a fellow who, when I saw him, he was in his early 30s, and he'd had a very erratic school record. He'd graduated from high school but didn't make it even in community college and dropped out, and he'd had a variety of jobs and had now settled into a stable job at which he did reasonably well. He said, "I know I've got ADHD. I've had it forever. I sort of feel comfortable living with it, but it sure bugs my wife." Because, I mean, he would not be reliable about standard things that she would ask him to do. She really felt like he wasn't holding up his end of the deal. And when she talked to him, it was impossible to keep his attention on her. So she never felt like she was getting through him. And so she said, "You know, you really have to do something about this, because it's really burdening our family situation very badly."
And at that point, though, how does the person know where to seek treatment? Do they at first go to their regular general practitioner, and then they suggest to go see a specialist, or how does that work?
This is a real problem, because there is not an awful lot of information known about attention deficit disorder in adults in the primary care medical community. I think the primary care physicians have done a marvelous job in the last 10 years of learning to recognize and treat depression. I think they've really come a long way, and my hat's off to them for doing that. But they aren't there yet about attention deficit disorder. So going to them is usually not terribly helpful unless they know somebody in the specialist community to refer to. And even in the psychiatric community, the best place to go initially are probably the child psychiatrists, because they are the ones who have been treating the children and who then would know about treating adults. But many child psychiatrists are already full up, and they don't want to be treating all of these adults, or they would have gone into adult psychiatry.
Mm-hmm.
So then they have to find people in their community who treat adults with ADHD. And I know this is a problem because I'm always looking for people in the Washington area to refer to.
Right. Is there some website or something that lists the doctors that treat ADHD throughout the country? Is there some sort of...
There isn't a good one.
No.
CHAD is the national organization, or one of the national organizations that exists to help patients and their family members. And certainly people can check with CHAD. It's just www.chadd.org, and it's on the net, and it's got a very good general information about ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether or not they've got a good directory of people to get specifics.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know, though. It's
chadd.org.
Okay.
Yep.
Go through some other symptoms, because that's interesting how there's just so much involved with it, though, with diagnosing the ADHD.
Well, I mean, some of the inattentive symptoms, mm-hmm. I've really talked about, you know, the failure to complete things on time.
Mm-hmm.
There are problems at work because people miss deadlines or only get stuff done at the last minute. The everyday, but at home, the problems are things like, you know, not getting taxes paid on time, not getting bills paid on time. People can be hyperactive and impulsive as well, which means if they can't sit still, they can't sit through a movie, they can't sit through a family dinner,
mm-hmm.
They can't take their turn. It's very hard for them to stand in line in a grocery store and just wait to get waited on. And this is an unacknowledged cause of road rage, because there are people who, when they're driving, are so impatient, and they're driven from within, and then they get enraged when they get stuck in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington area is second only to Los Angeles in this country for traffic jams.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of angry people out there, and some of them have undiagnosed and untreated ADHD.
Now, how do you know, though, truly, if it's just aggravation from all that traffic, or if it's just someone's maybe potentially has ADHD? That has to be such a fine line in determining.
Well, it is, but the point is that when you have, you've got to have documented
mm-hmm.
evidence of symptoms in at least two different settings.
Okay, two different settings.
Two different settings,
mm-hmm.
at home and at work or in one's social life that significantly interfere with making progress in life as one would expect. I mean, anybody can get ticked off in traffic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't have ADHD. I've
right.
got my quirks, but I don't have ADHD. And occasionally I get ticked off, but I don't regularly arrive at home enraged because of the traffic, and I don't have people afraid to ride with me because I'm screaming obscenities or pounding the dashboard repeatedly during a routine car trip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's really a matter of the degree of the symptoms, how many settings they're in, how consistent this is, and how long it's been going on.
So say someone has two symptoms, say at work and at home, where they're disorganized, they're not getting their work done, but they're quiet, where, I mean, they can sit still, they could sit through movies, they don't get outraged in traffic. Does that, without still consider them ADHD, being that there's at work and at home, just simply maybe being disorganized?
There are different subtypes of ADHD.
Okay.
ADHD is kind of an umbrella term,
mm-hmm.
and under that you have the combined type, where somebody has symptoms both of inattention and hyperactivity. You have the hyperactive type, where it's only hyperactive symptoms that cause them problems, and then you have the inattentive type, where it's only symptoms of inattention that cause problems. It's very rare for adults to have only the hyperactive type. Typically, they have either the inattentive type of ADHD or they have a combined type.
Okay. Talk about, I know you mentioned this a little bit in the book, about the comorbid psychiatric disorders. What exactly is that?
I don't like the word comorbid.
Oh, okay.
It sounds so gloomy, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the official term that we're stuck with.
Okay.
What it means is that it's very rare for adults who have ADHD just to have ADHD. They're much more likely than other persons also to have problems with depression, with anxiety, and with substance abuse.
Okay.
So that when I see patients with ADHD, I have to screen them for these other problems. If they do have the other problems, obviously it makes treatment more complicated. It makes the outlook not so good. And in some cases, these other coexisting conditions really complicate what I can do to treat the ADHD.
Now, do the patients at that time know they have some psych disorder, or is it a newly diagnosis that's being made when they come to see you? Or
well, I mean, when people come to see me, mm-hmm. I mean, increasingly because I've got a reputation for doing ADHD, mm-hmm. they come to me with that possibility in mind, mm-hmm. and then I, at the same time, look for these other conditions. But the it works the other way around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I now have to look at all the patients who come to see me to see whether or not they're coming for treatment for depression, but part of the reason why they may be depressed is they've got unrecognized and untreated ADHD. It goes both ways.
That
so
must
I
be
pretty much screen yeah. everybody for everything now.
Okay. That must is that so very difficult to do because there's so many different diagnoses involved? Is that
well, I mean first,
I mean, it seems.
I mean, it's my business.
Well, that's you're the expert. That's true.
I'm accustomed to that. But there are now rating scales where I can give patients self-report scales, and they can go home and fill them out. And in a few minutes, I can look quickly at those in mm-hmm. addition to my own impression. And you know, some of this is not subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this is not subtle.
And what are some of the different tests or the evaluation process when they come to see you? You just mentioned that they take some things home and they do that at home, but just maybe go into a little bit more detail about what kind of testing is given to them.
Well, I mean, the primary place where I start is mm-hmm. listening to what somebody has to say.
Okay.
So I'll start out asking people, you know, what's troubling you? Where is it troubling you? What's worst? What's getting in the way? Where do you think you should be at this point? What are you like at your best? I sort of have a number of standard questions.
Okay.
And then I'll ask them, you know, how far have you always been like this? Is this something that's really quite recent? Or is this, and how far back do these symptoms go? Very often, for people with ADHD, when they start thinking about it, the symptoms have been in place kind of forever. And then I will use rating scale, you know, then I'll use rating scales, and there are four or five standard ones.
Mm-hmm.
There's a set that are put out by Russell Barkley. There's another set that's put out by David Brown. There's the World Health Organization scale, and there's the Connors scales. I happen to like the Brown ADD scale, and I like the World Health Organization scale. And what all of these scales do is they just put in a standard format all of the diagnostic criteria in the American Psychiatric Association's diagnostical manual. They just put it into a system. And so you ask people all the specific questions, and you ask them how much trouble they have, and depending on how much trouble they have, you assign a numerical value to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you've worked your way through all of the symptoms and people have told you how much trouble they have, then you have a numerical value which can be compared with the numerical values of many, many other people who've been tested with this over the years, and you have some way of making some objective criteria for the diagnosis.
And what would that be, though, some of those criteria that, I know you talked, you know, about it a little bit before, but maybe a little bit in more detail, like specifically, I know you talk a lot with the patient to find out.
Well, you go through, you know, there are, the DSM lists mm-hmm. 8 or 9
okay.
Different criteria for inattention, and
okay.
8 or 9 different criteria for hyperactivity impulsivity. And you simply ask all the specific questions for each of those 9 criteria
right.
for each of those subsets.
Right. And what would they be? What kind of questions?
Do you have trouble paying attention to detail or make careless mistakes in your work?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have trouble sustaining attention when you're trying to do a specific task? Do people complain that you don't seem to listen when they talk to you directly?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have trouble following through on instructions and finishing tasks? Do you have trouble getting stuff together to get going on tasks? Do you find yourself avoiding tasks that require sustained mental effort?
Mm-hmm.
Do you often lose things that are necessary? Your keys, your wallet, your credit cards. Do you find yourself easily distracted by extraneous stimuli, finding it hard to stay on task? Are you often forgetful? Do you have a hard time remembering what's happened in the last 24 hours? Those are all symptoms of inattention.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, to make the diagnosis, somebody has to have six or more of those have to be documented.
Oh, okay, so six or more.
And now, it's the same thing mm-hmm. for symptoms of hyperactivity or impulsivity. For a diagnosis to be made, you have to have six or more of those
okay.
nine symptoms.
And how long does it take to make a diagnosis about once the patient comes to see you? How long going through all this processes does it take?
With some patients, I mean, I typically start out in an hour-long initial diagnostic consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody who comes in with a clear history, and especially if they've got documentation from before and they've sent that to me in advance, I can make the diagnosis and get them going in an initial hour. Sometimes it takes two or three visits, but
mm-hmm.
somebody who's well-prepared, I can get rolling in an hour.
Wow. You are the expert then, because there's so much involved with it. That's great. So take the listeners, though, through now some of the treatments. So somebody comes to you and you definitely diagnose them then having ADHD. Then what's their treatment like?
There are a range of treatments, but usually treatment does involve medication.
Mm-hmm.
When I came into psychiatry, I was very much against medication because I thought people should be able to talk their problems out. And I still do psychotherapy and find it very helpful, but it's clear since ADHD is really a kind of a fine level neurological problem that medication is very, very useful.
Mm-hmm.
And the medications that we use are the same medications that we use in children. And there are two kinds.
Okay.
A group called the central nervous system stimulants, and these are the ones that everybody's heard of.
Right.
Ritalin, Concerta, Focalin, Dexedrine, Adderall XR, a brand new one called Vyvanse.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other medications which aren't central nervous system stimulants, but which also help. And the best known one of these that's been approved by the FDA is a medication called Strattera.
Oh, okay.
So there are two groups of, mm-hmm. there are a couple of others, but those are the main ones.
And how often do they take them? Once a day, every day, or, I guess it depends on what they're given, though.
Well, the central nervous system stimulants are generally comparably short-acting
mm-hmm.
medications. But with modern technology, many people are able to take those just once a day and have that take care of their symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Strattera is a longer-acting medication, but people still basically have to take that once a day. So not always, but typically people are able to take something once a day and cover their symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And when they come back to you after being on the meds, what do they say? Do they see a difference in their behaviors? Does the spouse see a difference?
when treatment works, and it mm-hmm. doesn't always mm-hmm. work, the differences can be really dramatic. And yes, the spouses have been known to say something, whatever else you do, for God's sake, don't stop taking that medicine. and I've had people say that to me in my office. Please don't keep him or her taking this medicine because it's making a big difference in our family's life. So the medicine, and I think that ADHD is a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day deal, so I tend to recommend that people take the medication every day. A lot of people just think about this as medicine that you just take when you've got some especially big project to do, but for most of my patients, they do best if they take it continuously.
Now, what if they have an underlying other disorder of depression and they're on meds for that?
Well, that's where the plot begins to thicken
mm-hmm.
because sometimes there's no problem combining the ADHD medications with the depression medication, but at other times, if a patient has bipolar disorder, That's a mood disorder where somebody has extreme mood highs as well as extreme mood lows. And the central nervous system stimulants that are helpful for ADHD can push one of those patients into a high.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really dangerous. So I have to be very careful before starting somebody on a central nervous system stimulant to be sure they don't have untreated bipolar disorder. If they do have bipolar disorder, I have to be sure that they're stabilized, typically on a medicine called a mood stabilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Once that's in place, then it's safe to add the central nervous system stimulants.
Okay.
So sometimes
mm-hmm.
this gets... Sometimes ADHD patients are the easiest patients to take care of, and sometimes they are the hardest.
Right, yeah. Well, if there's other symptoms, other disorders or diagnoses, it's so involved.
You've got to be paying attention to all of it.
Right. And what's the science behind the ADHD, though, the brain activity? What is it different than...
The ADHD brain is different mm-hmm. than the brain of a person who doesn't have ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've found, knowing something about the brain... Attention is actually a fairly complicated brain function, and the brain operates to produce attention in four or five different locations. If there are problems at any one of those locations, the clinical picture can be that of ADHD. And we've seen now with neuroimaging that those four or five areas in the ADHD brain look different than they look in persons who do not have ADHD. So that there's actually less brain cortex mm-hmm. in the people who have ADHD than of so-called normals.
Mm-hmm. And for people, the listeners out there, if they want more information on ADHD, where's a good place to go? I know you have, your website is actually, you have a lot of information on that.
Right. My website is www.ADHDspotlight.com, spelled S-P-O-T-L-I-G-H-T, .com.
Right, okay.
And people are welcome to tune into that. I have 4 to 6 new entries about all aspects of adult ADHD every week. But for beginners, for people who just want to learn something about this, I'd go first to Chad.
To Chad, okay. C-H-A-D-D
.com, right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, .com or .org?
Let me check, actually. While I'm checking on that, another very good website is called advance.com, ADDVANCE.com.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, it's chad.org, not chad.com.
Okay.
So I go first to chad.org.
C-H-A-D-D.org. Okay.
Right.
And what was the other one, advance?
ADDVANCE.
Dot com. Okay.
That's another very good starter kind of website.
Okay. Any to sum up quickly, we have about 1 minute left. Do you have for all the listeners out there, if they're
right,
thinking?
If people are not getting where they think they should be in life,
mm-hmm.
although they're doing their best, they should think in terms of, especially if there's a history of ADD in the family anywhere, they should get evaluated in treatment, because treatment doesn't always work, but it can radically turn people's lives around.
Great. Dr. Doyle, thank you so very much for joining us today and sharing your medical expertise.
Talk with you. It's a great idea for your program.
Oh, great. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, yeah.
And for more info, again, the website is ADHDspotlight.com or chad.org.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep.
And next week, join us. Tune in on August 3rd. Dr. Gary Sachs, Associate Professor in Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and Director of the Bipolar Mood Disorder Program at Massachusetts General Hospital, will join us to talk about improving the health of people with bipolar disorder, especially in trying to reduce their cardiac risk. Thanks to everyone for listening. Stay safe. And as always, be in charge of your health. Speak up and ask questions. Have a great week. I'm Barbara for Care for Health and 30. See you next week.